Chapter 4. Bortho Buffol, Volpido, Arena Po, Marostica, Rin. On the 6th of July 1480, three Jews accused of ritual child murder, required for the performance of their Passover rites, during the Passover period of that year, were executed at Venice. Servadio da Colonia, moneylender at Porto Buffolo, Mose de Treviso and Jacobo of Cologne, having confessed, sometimes spontaneously and sometimes under torture, were impaled and burned alive in public in the Piazza San Marco, between the two columns of San Marco and San Tadaro. Another defendant, Jacopo with the beard, committed suicide in prison to avoid torture. Other Jews, from Porto Buffolo and Treviso, were condemned to various punishments of imprisonment for complicity in the crime and thereafter banned from Venice and its territory. Tried and condemned before the Podesta of Porto Buffolo, the Venetian Andrea Dolfin, the defendants had appealed to the Avogaria di Comune, but, notwithstanding the fact that they were defended by some of the best lawyers in Padua, their sentence was upheld. According to the indictment, a small wandering beggar about 6 years of age, a native of Siriate in the Bergamo region, had been abducted from the marketplace at Treviso, where he had been begging, by two Jews, who were alleged to have taken him to nearby Porto Buffolo, on the Livenza River, in an eventful journey, the stages of which did not pass entirely unobserved by travellers and boatmen. Here, in the dwelling of the local moneylender, Servadio, who was also the instigator of the abduction, the cruel crime was said to have been committed for ritual purposes, in the presence and with the active participation of other local and foreign Jews. After draining off the blood, the perpetrators burnt the body in the oven of a house owned by Mose de Treviso, another moneylender at Porto Buffolo. Denunciations and informers' reports, including Donato, Serradio's servant, then converted to Christianity, are said to have led to the indictment of the Jewish defendants and to their condemnation for the murder of the nameless little victim, immediately baptized under the name of Sebastiano Novello, of obvious significance. Porto Buffolo, like so many other small centers of the Marca of Treviso and the territory of Venice, was, in the 15th century, the seat of a community of Ashkenazi Jews, the traces of which have remained in Hebraic manuscript texts, copied in that small city in the years preceding the Sebastiano Novello murder. The chronicle of this cruel execution, as described by the direst apologists of the time, inform us that at least one of the defendants, Servadio, faced death in prayer, accompanied by contemptuous remarks about Christianity. This detail may be related to the legendary story of a stone slab, walled in the Ashkenazim synagogue Scuola Canton of the ghetto of Venice, containing a verse from the Psalms 32:10, "Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he that trusteth in the Lord, mercy shall encompass him." In the local Hebraic tradition, this phrase is said to have been pronounced by Servadio himself, among the flames of the stake in the Piazza San Marco. During these terrible moments, the condemned man is said to have taken the time to point out the unhappy informer, his servant Donato, baptized under the name of Sebastiano, to the Jews in the crowd, who were present at this terrifying ceremony. The spectators are said to have included Joseph, cantor of the synagogue of Porto Buffolo, who was perhaps the same face who acted as teacher in Servadio's dwelling, who is said to have interpreted the psalm with a new meaning, imparted by the person reciting it, the bitter pains which I suffer, will fall on the wicked. Thus history and hagiography became confused, while the authenticity and memory of the child's true martyrdom ricocheted back and forth between Christians and Jews. Milan, summer of 1482. A brother of the Order of the Serpti, Giovanni Gira, and Simone, Jew of Tortona, were publicly executed by order of the Duke. Gira was said to have been accused of barbarously killing a child about 9 years of age, near the farmhouse Corticavacca di Volpido, near Tortona, on Holy Tuesday of that year. The second defendant was accused of instigating the friar to commit the crime, so as to obtain the blood of a Christian child, as required for the Jewish Passover rites. Both defendants confessed. In the preceding May, a special commission had left the court of the Sforzans with the assignment of investigating the cruel death of Giovannino Costa, a young shepherd, who was accustomed to coming down from the hills to Tortona to sell eggs and butter on market days. The diligent commissioner ordered the arrest of all the members of the little Jewish community of German origin, including Maddio Maha, Mayor, the local moneylender, and the requisition of all pledges deposited in the bank. The persons under investigation were subsequently transferred to Milan. At the conclusion of the investigation, the culpability of the Jew Simone, the instigator, and the scoundrel friar, the unnatural, cruel executioner, was clearly established. The other persons under investigation, including the banker, were released, following a finding that they had had nothing to do with the crime, and were permitted to leave Tortona. From the official correspondence sent by the court of the Sforzans to the Podesta and the Bishop of Tortona, we learn that a certain homicide being committed during the past holy days against the person of a boy, at the instance of certain Jews in the diocese of Tortona, the following persons are held in prison here: Fra Giovanni Gira of the Order of the Servants, and one Simon, a Jew, who did not deny having committed the said excess, the horrible and detestable nature of which, in the eyes of any faithful Christian, we leave to you to judge. The wicked friar, with many wounds, cruelly killed the innocent boy in the region of the Tortona to sell his blood to the Jews. The death of the presumed guilty parties and the prompt release of the other suspected Jews were insufficient to restore equilibrium to their relations with the community of Tortona. Many Jews emigrated elsewhere, the others became Christian. Simon's widow, executed at Milan, was left with a daughter, who took the name of Michela. Simon's other four sons, two aged less than 7, and the other two 10 and 12 respectively, were made to take refuge with the Jews of Piacenza, out of fear that they might be converted to Christianity. On the 24th of April 1483, the Duke of Milan, under pressure from the justly impatient Bishop of Tortona, Giacomo Botta, requested the Podesta of Piacenza to do everything possible to ensure that his two smaller sons were returned with speed to Donna Michela to receive the holy baptism. In the collective memory of the Ashkenazi Jews of northern Italy, the crime of Volpido was to appear rather similar to that of Trent. It is true that Yosef HaKohen, Giuseppe Sacerdoti, one of the most famous Jewish chroniclers of the 16th century, after sadly reporting the events linked to the martyrdom of Simonino, observed that in those years, the Jews in the territory of Tortona were slandered because of a Jew at the place, as had happened at Trent, and here, as well, the boy, named Giovannino, was called a saint. and the people went fornicating after him, and for us, it was only harm and disgrace. The Volpido case, involving a criminal wearing the cassock of a brother in the holy orders, was not an isolated one. In the summer of 1481, a Minorite Franciscan friar was arrested at Cortamaga on a charge of accepting a commission from local Jews to commit a child murder intended to provide them with Christian blood for their Passover, the generous commission amounting to 400 gold ducats. Placed in a cage and appended from the bell tower at Cremona, the friar was left to die slowly of starvation, after which his body became a feast for birds of prey. The documents say nothing of the fate of the Jews, the presumed instigators of this holy homicide. Arena, April 1479. In this village on the banks of the Po River, a child disappeared along the road from Padua to Piacenza during the Passover period of that year, while suspicion immediately fell on the local moneylenders Pilomo di Maddio Simhabunin B. Mayor, and his entourage. Finally, David, employed by Pilomo, decided to spill the beans and reveal the particulars of this obscure crime. His patron had commissioned Donato, a Jew from Padua, to abduct a Christian child to prepare for the Jewish ceremonies. Conveyed in secrecy to Bilomo's dwelling, the child, known only by the nickname Theolulu, was said to have been cruelly crucified in a holy ceremony with the participation of all the local Jews and others from other neighboring villages. The little victim's body is finally said to have been thrown by night into the muddy waters of the Po. This was considered sufficient to proceed with the arrest of the parties guilty of this brutal crime, as well as that of their accomplices, both men and women, including Bilomo's wife, who uselessly but vehemently protested her husband's innocence. Sickle Eyes Shake, a moneylender from the Borgo San Giovanni, in the Piacenza region, who had, years before, been mentioned in the defendant's depositions at the Trent trial as an habitual consumer of Christian blood, and had for this reason been exposed to more than a few minor risks, was also arrested and taken to Pavia, where he was to be tried. In the meantime, Donato, the supposed author of the abduction and one of the principal perpetrators of the child's crucifixion, at the conclusion of a difficult interrogation confessed everything and pointed an accusing finger at Bilomo and his family. The Podesta of Pavia lost no time and proceeded with the seizure and confiscation of all the goods of the Jews of Arena. But then a sensation occurred. Theolulu, the crucified child, turned up perfectly safe and sound. His body, examined by physicians and experts with all due diligence, didn't even have a scratch on it. At this point, Gengolizo Maria Sforza and his mother, the Duchess Bona, imperiously requested that Bilomo and Donato, the principal defendants, accused of a ritual infanticide that never happened, were transferred, without further delay, to Milan, together with the resurrected boy. The protests of the Pavian authorities, who desired unperturbedly to proceed with preparations for the trial, as if nothing had happened, produced no effect. The guileless Theolulu was presented on a seat in the Senate, in Milan, unaware of the reasons for all the hullabaloo, having himself become the principal personage in a sort of virtual ritual homicide. His interrogation helped disperse the fog of mystery which still envelopes this grotesque tale. Finally, as might have been anticipated, Bilomo and Donato were acquitted of all charges in the indictment for a crime which was never committed, were released from jail and permitted to return to Arima. The Duke of Milan and his mother did not fail to voice their own profound disappointment to the rulers of Pavia in a missive, sent after the release of the Jews, written without any moderation of discourse. "We are amazed, not without annoyance, by this scandalous invention, of which have just caused such great inconvenience to both people and subjects." He concluded the letter, celebrating his own sense of justice and equanimity, that we have caused the truth to be known about such a scandalous imputation. The Duke then demanded that the property illegally seized at Bellomo and other Jews of Arena be immediately returned. 1 month later, there was still no change in the situation, and, as a result of the protests from the Jews, the Duke of Milan repeated, with renewed vigor, his request that the goods seized from them at the time should be returned. The response, from the Podestà of Pavia, is an inimitable example of both impudence and insensitivity. He would release the Jews' property and sign it back over to them, but the heavy burden of procedural costs, plus the salaries of all judges, notaries and functionaries having concerned themselves with the case, would have to be paid by the acquitted defendants. The ineffable Podestà said that he was fully convinced that the Jews would be open-minded and well-disposed to accede to the paradoxical statement that, for so little money, I am certain the Jews will not prove themselves too unwilling. The facts of the Arena case led the representatives of the Jewish communities of Lombardy to appeal to Gengolizzo Maria Sforza, so that he might defend them from the ritual murder accusations which were spreading dangerously, like a spot of oil on water, throughout all the territories at that time, threatening to conclude in the same tragic manner as the Trent affair. Nor could the confessions, often extorted with torture and violence, constitute valid proof linking the Jews to such horrendous crimes, as indicated by the outcome of the affair at Arena Po. The accused, at the said locality of Arena, as a result of the tremendous torments inflicted upon them in various parts of the body, confessed to committing a crime of which they were innocent, and confined in the Castello, and in the Casa del Capitano di Giustizia, for acknowledging that what they had said was actually true, and if God, in His grace, had not sent word that the boy had been found, they would have fared worse than the defendants at Trent, which only God knows whether it was true or not, and let us just hope that God makes a demonstration of the truth in due time. The Arena case was not an isolated one. The Jews, in their appeal of the 19th of May 1479, informed Sforza that other, repeated, accusations of ritual infanticide, all proving false and inconsistent, had been made over the last few months in various cities of the dukedom, from Pavia to Valenza, from Stradella to Bormio. The following case occurred 2 months ago, in Valenza, finding that a boy was missing, suspicion being aroused against the Jews of that region. The Jews were badly threatened, and if, by the grace of God, the boy had not been found drowned in a ditch, they would certainly have suffered worse. Similarly, a boy from Monte Castillo being lost, the Jews of that region were accused, but the boy was later found. The same thing happened at Bormio, as well as at Pavia. A boy remained outside the bridge of Ticino after nightfall and was taken in by a gentleman to stay at his house, so as to return him to his own home. And as the boy was not immediately found, suspicion fell upon the Jews, with much murmuring against the Jews. A house was searched with many threats, in such a way that the patron of the house fled in fear and has still not returned. And if the boy had not then been found, the Jews would not have been without danger and serious trouble, as happened to the Jews of Stradella, as well as at Pavia, which were sacked, causing the people to grumble, at the risk of raising a great scandal and disorder to the detriment and danger of the state of your illustrious lordship. After stating the classical motives, which should have deprived the ritual murder accusation of all credibility, particularly, in light of the biblical prohibition against killing and against the consumption of blood, the representatives of the Jewish communities of Lombardy added another motive, which to our minds seems odd. In the lands of the Great Turk, where powerful and wealthy Jews lived and prospered, owning large numbers of Christian slaves, both adults and children, it was said to be an easy matter for Jews to procure the blood of Christian children without running any risk to their persons and property at all. But this did not occur, and there was no news from those regions of child murders committed by Jews for ritual purposes. There are, it is said there, innumerable rich Jews in the lands of the Turks, Moors and other infidels, who hold slaves and servants, and are able to have the Christian boys at their pleasure, to do what they liked with them without respect or danger, which does not prevent them from doing such things in the lands of the Christians, at the price of great danger, not only to their property but also to their person. The argument could just as easily have been turned around. Even the most inveterate anti-Semites knew in fact that the accusations of ritual murder and profanation of the host were confined to relatively small geographical areas, which included all Jewish communities of the German language regions, as well as all the Ashkenazi regions in Italy, at the foot of the Alps. Giovanni Hinderbach himself, in the autographic preamble to the trials, explained the manner in which the child murder committed by the Jews of Trent was in no way a novelty. In fact, he added, the impiety of the Jews has come cruelly to light over the past few years in many cities and localities of Germany, as well as in regions such as Swabia and Bavaria, Austria and Styria, the Rhineland and Saxony, as well as in Poland and Hungary. The lands of the Great Turk were obviously excluded. Not many years had passed since the incidents at Arena, Botha Buffel and Volpedo, when a new ritual murder case came to light, upsetting the lives of the Jewish communities of northern Italy. During Holy Week, April of 1485, in Volrovina, in the territories of the Marostica region, a five-year-old child, Lorenzino Sossio, was found murdered, his body horribly mutilated. The macabre discovery, at the feet of an oak tree in a pasture on the upland plain, was made by a local goatherd, while a hermit, a devout hermit, who had long been a spectator and had diligently observed everything, informed the authorities and populace that the killers had committed the horrendous crime by mutilating poor Lorenzino in the foreskin, inflicting upon him by force of repeated punctures and wounds in the blood vessels, finally stoning the body and covering it with stones. The news was immediately disseminated that the persons responsible for the ritual murder were Jews, from Bassano, having come to the Vasontino for business or pleasure, but perhaps principally to commit the crime. Thus the chronicles reported the tragic fate of Lorenzino Sossio de Volrovina, later beatified as Simoncino of Trent, the quoadis traditio cum fas ab Hebris oxygium, of whom tradition has it that he was killed by the Jews. In 1485, the 5th of April in the Villa di Val Ravina under Marostica in the territory of the Vasontino region, the Jews stoned the sainted Lorenzino, 5 years old, and buried him several times under rocks. But one of his arms always extended from the grave. Once discovered, the delinquents were punished, and all the Jews were expelled by the above-mentioned residents of the Vasontino from their city and district. And the Serenissima Prince of Venice confirmed the sentence by ducal order in 1486. 5 years later, in the spring of 1500, the Podesta of Vicenza, Alvis Moro, informed the Venetian authorities that the devout hermit, sole eyewitness to the crime, after being incarcerated and duly tortured, had revealed the name of the person guilty of Lorenzino's murder. The murderer was alleged to be Marcuccio, moneylender at Bassano, which her hermit is in prison here, and would like permission to speak, wishing to know the truth, that if they took Juan Marcuccio, a Jew, they would find out something. Take the Jew, accused of killing the boy, and take Marcuccio to Bassan, and you will learn the truth, is what the hermit said, in those very words. Marcuccio was the son of Lazaro sacerdote of Treviso, who worked at Cittadella and was a nephew of Salomone Lupio di Sacco. Active at Bassano, although highly unpopular locally, he had until then enjoyed the protection of Venice, constant over time, the city having renewed his 10-year money-lending permit in April of 1499. We do not know whether the tardy revelations of the devout hermit induced Marcuccio to leave Bassano and turn over the management of the local money-lending bank. But that was precisely what happened, after the nephew of Salomone the Piove had become, it seems, the principal protagonist of a tardy trial, brought at Vicenza for the murder of the boy Marostica. However that may be, even in that region, the mystery of the crime was not solved, nor were the guilty ever identified with certainty. In the light of what we have just observed, it seems obvious that the expulsion of the Jews from Vicenza in 1486 and the cessation of their money-lending activities were not related to the presumed martyrdom of the Saint Lorenzino. Of course, none of this will discourage historians, scholars and local priests constantly on the lookout for more or less imaginary holy personages by means of whom their own poverty-stricken, obscure village or locality may be exalted, causing it to perform an otherwise inconceivable quantum leap of fame. 23 years before, at Rin, Diocese of Bresciana, on the road to Innsbruck, a company of Jewish merchants, returning from the fair at Murano, were traversing a small village in the Tyrol and bumped into a 3-year-old child, Andrea Oxner. Having informed themselves as to his family, the Jews knew that the mother was far from home, in the fields at Ambras reaping wheat, and that little Andrea had been entrusted to the care of his godfather, the Wieselbauer of Rin, and May. Employing every possible stratagem and pretext, the Jews induced this dishonest peasant to hand the child over to them, promising that they would take him away with them to live a life of ease and comfort. But they had no intention of travelling very far with him. Stopping in a birch tree thicket, a little ways above Rin, the innocent victim's veins were barbarously and cruelly severed by those inhuman creatures, who then hung the bloodless cadaver from a tree. Having obtained the Christian blood which they needed, the Jewish merchants hurried to leave the scene, crossing the northern confines of the Tyrol on the road to Elbingen. The martyred child's body was discovered by the desperate mother. The godfather, under intense interrogation, admitted entrusting Andrea to the Jews on the promise that they would educate the child in luxury and riches. He then confessed that he had been persuaded by innumerable glasses of wine, drunk in the company of those foreigners, and a hatful of gold coins which had been placed in his hand. The impious May's fate was signed, more by God than by men. The perfidious peasant who sold the child was condemned to perpetual imprisonment in his own house, linked with chains, where he lived imprisoned and mad for a good 2 whole years. Thus recites the implausible hagiography of Andrea of Rin, which is full of gaps and for which there is no convincing contemporary documentation. The report remains inextricably linked to local traditions whose relationship to reality can only leave one perplexed and dubious. Nevertheless, the Cardinal Lorenzo Ganganelli, later Pope Clement XIV, in his famous report of the 19th of January 1760, presented to the Congregation of the Holy Office, with which he intended in general to absolve the Jews from the accusation of ritual infanticide, made an exception in the case of Andreas of Rin, as well as in the case of the martyrdom of Simon of Trent. The two cases were to be considered exceptional events, not to be generalized, but were nevertheless concrete and real. I therefore admit as true the fact of the sainted Simon, the boy of 3 years of age killed by Jews in hatred of the faith of Jesus Christ in Trent in the year 1475. I accept as true another crime, committed in the village of Rin, diocese of Bresianen, in 1462, against the sainted Andrea, a boy barbarously killed by the Jews in hatred of the faith of Jesus Christ. I do not, however, believe, even admitting as true the true facts of Bresianen and Trent, that one can justifiably deduce that this is a maxim, either theoretical or practical, of the Hebrew nation, since two events alone are insufficient to establish a certain and common axiom. The accused in the Trent trial in 1475, under torture, supplied ample testimony of ritual homicides committed, according to them, in the preceding years in the German-speaking lands from which they came, and in the centers of northern Italy where communities of Ashkenazi Jews had formed more or less recently. The defendants were alleged to have assisted or participated in these murders directly. In some cases, they had only heard about them from others. Sometimes they were able to remember the names of the other Jews who had taken part. Isaac Oda Gridel, Nivdira, immigrated from Voitsburg, a village near Kilberg, was employed as a cook by Angelo of Verona, one of the principal defendants in the trial for the death of Simonino. In 1460, Isaac O attended the lower courses of a Talmudic school at Worms, in the territory of the Rhineland, and it was there that he participated in a ritual murder, a little before Passover. A Jew by the name of Zelposha is said to have purchased a 2-year-old child from a Christian beggar at a very high price and to have taken the child to his dwelling in the Jewish quarter. The murder is said to have been committed here, in the spacious staffa parlor of the house, in a collective ritual, with the participation of about 40 local Jews. The blood is said to have been gathered in a glass receptacle, but is not said to have reached the quantity of liquid contained in 2 eggshells. Joe Avervans back in Franconia was a domestic servant in the house of the Maestro Tobias de Magdeburg, the oculist physician of Trent. Joe Ave had recently immigrated from the city of Prince Bishop Hinderbach, and had previously rendered service in the house of a Jew named Mahamer at Würzburg for over 15 years. During this period, Joave testified to having seen the Christian servant, Elizabeth Baumgartner, assigned to housework, which was forbidden to Jews on Sabbath days, introduce Christian children into the dwelling, in secrecy and during the night, on at least three occasions. The murders were said to have been committed in the woodshed, in a collective ritual which then concluded in the chapel synagogue, in a ceremony with the participation of numerous local Jews. The blood was gathered in a silver chalice, while the children's bodies were buried at night in a terrain owned by Mahar, outside the city. Mosevin's back, the young teacher of Maestro Tobias' children, for his part, informed the judges that, in 1472, while he was working at Nuremberg, he had learned that a ritual murder had been committed approximately 8 years beforehand, in the dwelling of a certain Mayor Pillman, in the presence of them with the participation of all the males of the family. Mosle Bamberg was a poor traveller who, having left Bayreuth with his son on his way to Pavia, had stopped for a brief stay in the city of Trent, as a guest in moneylender Samuel de Nuremberg's house, and had, to his disgrace, been present during the tragic days of the murder, confessing his knowledge of the murders to the judges. In 1466, on the road from Frankfurt on the Oder, in the Mark of Brandenburg, while transporting some goods to be sold in that city, he had stumbled across some professional child hunters. While travelling through a thick forest, Mose had, in fact, encountered two Jews, remembering only their first names, Salomone and Jacobo, in the act of preparing to hurl into a nearby river the bodies of two boys, massacred by them previously. Their prey had been captured in a small peasant village at the foot of the forest. The two hunters showed the appalled Mose their tin-plated iron bottles, filled with red liquid, and were satisfied at the thought that they were going to rake in a tidy sum through the sale of that liquid. But they needed the money to live. Whether or not this was all simply a Grimm Brothers fairy tale, which might well be told at the right time and place to frighten children and give them sleepless nights, we don't know. It is certain that the poor Mosle Bamberg could not precisely remember the identity of the two hunters and was unable to locate the forest in which the crimes had been committed. Nor did he know the names of the two victims or the village from which they had been abducted, or the name of the river into which they were said to have been thrown. He recited this fantastic confession before his attentive inquisitors, oscillating, suspended by a rope tied around his feet and his head downwards. Israel the Brandenburg, the strange young painter, later baptized under the name of Wolfgang, knew how to be loquacious when he had to be, and had heaps of picturesque ritual murder tales to tell, tales which had reached his ears more or less directly, with which to regale his avid and powerful interlocutors. He had allegedly gathered this information for several months, moving from the Rhineland to the Tyrol, then down to Venice, travelling through the cities of the Veneto. He claimed to possess first-hand information on the ritual murders of Christian children committed at Gunzenhausen in 1461 and Wending 10 years afterwards. At Pildisacco and Felter, Jews from his native country had told him of the ritual murders recently committed at Padua and at Mesta. The women in the trial were no less prominent, and their report of the child murders committed by their men, husbands, parents, friends and friends, were precise and detailed. Verona, Angelo da Verona's sister, was a survivor of family and marital problems. She had lived with her stepfather, Cem, from the time she was a little girl, first at Canaliano del Fiume and then at Mesta. When she was little over 14 years old, she had been married off, against her will, to Maddio Mer, a Jew from Borgomanero in the Navarra region. Maddio had a reputation as a meanman and a thoroughly bad egg, who, after wasting the already scanty family fortune in gambling, had abandoned her, moving elsewhere. As a result, Bina had returned to her mother's house at Canaliano del Fiume, and was then taken to Trent with her mother Brunetta Brunlin, also an unhappy and frustrated woman, as the more or less welcome guests of her brother, Angelo da Verona, who had, in recent years, been able to scrape together a small fortune in the money trade. Before the judges, Bina admitted to using Christian blood during the Passover period, beginning as early as her brief matrimonial journey to Borgomanero. Her husband Maddio had obtained it from a carpenter friend, guilty of killing a boy for this purpose from Maserano in Piedmont. Bina said that, during the entire time that she stayed with the said husband Maddio, her husband used the blood of a Christian child. And she did the same during the three-year period of her stay at the Castello di Borgomanero, adding, when asked, that her husband had obtained the blood he used from a certain Mose, a Jewish carpenter and resident of Maserano in Piedmont. That Mose had conveyed the blood to her husband through a servant of the said Mose, whose name Bina said she did not know, and that the servant, in bringing the blood, in Bina's presence, had told Maddio that Mose had obtained the blood in this manner. And that one day, as Mose was on his way home from some place, he had met a Christian child whom he abducted and brought in secrecy to his dwelling, killing him and draining the blood. On the other hand, Bina, in perfect accord with Sarah, Maestro Tobias' second wife, who came from Swabia and had lived in Marburg and the Tyrol, with Bella, Mose the Würzburg's daughter-in-law, who had married Moses' son Meir Meir and knew how to write Yiddish, and Anna, Samuel de Nuremberg's young daughter-in-law, remembered another child murder committed a few years before, in 1472 or 1473, also at Trent, committed by more or less the same people guilty in the Simon of Trent affair. The victim of this murder was a three-year-old child, sold to Maestro Tobias by a beggar in the German-speaking region and brought to Trent. The child was killed during a collective ceremony in the antechamber of the synagogue, with the participation of the majority of the Jews living in the city, the blood being collected in a silver vase. At night, this same Tobias took charge of throwing the body of the child into the Adige. Sarah, Maestro Tobias' wife, also remembered hearing talk, in the house, of another homicide, committed at Trent in 1451 by Isacco and other Jews from Trent. However, she knew nothing of the details. Isacco was Maestro Tobias' father-in-law, being the father of Tobias' first wife, Anne, who had died, leaving Tobias a widower. Isacco is almost certainly identical with the money lender of the same name active at Trent in the first half of the 14th century. There are, of course, no objective records of these ritual murder stories, eventful and cruel, with their horrible and repulsive connotations. The defendants were capable of inventing accusations out of whole cloth to placate their jailers. To make them more believable, these stories might have caused the names of relatives or even distant acquaintances to emerge jumbled up from the mists of the past, from the localities of the defendant's childhood or youth, or from localities in which they had lived for a while. It is impossible to believe that the ritual murders over the same period and within the same geographical confines as those we have discussed so far are any more reliable.